that brings up a very interesting question. Who is with the children? When do mom and dad find time to be together? The actual time of which families are together is extremely diminished. Quality spouse-to-spouse time averages as little as 4 minutes a day of meaningful conversation, while parent-to-child quality time resides in the same neighborhood, between 30 seconds and 5 minutes a day, depending on which study you are examining. The age of baby boomers is over, and the rise of baby busters is occurring. Baby busters are a generation raised largely without parents and who've spent a good portion of their lives in front of the TV. The move from rural to urban to suburban has negatively affected the amount of time that we spend together in relationships. The culture is not conducive to the mentoring philosophy. We simply don't have time for it. Well, let me ask, are relationships really that important anyway? I mean, maybe we're making really a big deal out of something that is really irrelevant. Maybe we're making a mountain out of a molehill. Maybe we're dealing with minutiae here. Well, what kind of weight does the Bible place on relationships? Matthew chapter 22, verses 34 through 40, answers that question. But when the Pharisees heard that he had put the Sadducees to silence, they gathered themselves together. And one of them, a lawyer, asked him a question, testing him. Teacher, which is the greatest commandment in the law? And he said to him, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the great and foremost commandment. The second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments depend the whole law and the prophets. In these verses, we are reminded that the whole law is summed up by our relationship with God and our relationship with others. Obviously, the relationship of greatest importance is our relationship with God. Jesus quotes Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 5, in response to the lawyer's question. However, Jesus continues to give the second greatest commandment. The lawyer didn't ask for the second response, but Jesus must feel that it complements the first one so beautifully that it must be stated. And so he quotes a portion of Leviticus chapter 19, verse 18. And of all the commandments that Jesus could have quoted, he purposefully and divinely quoted this one. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. Verse 40 says, on these two commandments depend the whole law and the prophets. Now, of all the law and of all the prophets, these two things sum up the essence of the teaching. So, what God is most concerned about is our relationship with Him and our relationship with others. Many have referred to this as our vertical relationship with God, being lived out on the horizontal plane of relationships with others. So God places a tremendous amount of weight on the relational aspect of life. Relationships are an important trademark of Christianity. Additionally, the learning process in our culture has shifted from being relationally based. Our instruction in the modern age relies primarily on computers, classrooms, books, videos, and the like. So the relational connection between the knowledge and experience giver and the receiver is weakened because of the move from rural to suburbanization, the shift in the learning process, and the lack of existing relationships. If those are the main reasons why mentoring hasn't been a strong aspect of our society, then what accounts for the rise of interest in this phenomenon? Why are more and more people seeking someone to mentor them? Well, I believe that there are many reasons in answer to that question, but three very important ones, of which I'll mention. First, people are beginning to realize its value for them. Many are beginning to wake up to the fact that the process of learning and the process of maturing needs time, and it also needs many relationships. Homeschooling really is a good example of expanded growth. What began as mainly a religious context is attracting more and more people, 15% of which have no religious reason for pursuing this type of education. One reason the homeschool movement is growing is that more and more people are discovering the value of one-on-one interaction, a passing on of values and experiences in a highly relational context. There's really even a renewal of references to mentoring in business literature, in the world of education, and in social work. More and more individuals are seeking out a mentoring relationship because they recognize its value to learning. They recognize its value to growing and maturing as an individual. A second and very big reason why mentoring is on the rise is due to the growing recognition and acknowledgement of the tremendous relational vacuum in our individualistic society. We are beginning to realize that we are relationally deficient. We're just beginning to realize that we need relationships in our culture. Lasting ones, ones that are important, ones that are meaningful. Americans cling rigidly to their personal independence. But you know, God did not create us for independence, but dependence upon Him and interdependence with each other. Now let me say that again. That is extremely important. God did not create us for independence, but dependence upon Him and interdependence with each other. We are not to be self-sufficient and move through life alone. That's not how we were created. A study examined over 600 leaders and found that between 3 and 10 significant people helped shape their lives. In other words, these leaders got where they are not by a lone rangerism attitude or by being self-made, but they got where they are now because they had help. 3 to 10 people made significant contributions to their development. The growing recognition of one's need for meaningful relationships can be a springboard for growth and development, the seedlings of a mentoring process. So secondly, we're finding more and more people are sensing the need for relationships. Third, individuals are discovering anew that almost all of the training of the people in the Bible occurred in a mentoring context. See, preaching and the acquisition of biblical truth is not enough. It's not enough to develop a full Christ-likeness. Now, those things need to happen. They are good, but it needs to happen in a mentoring context. I don't want to downplay that whatsoever. But we not only gain facts and knowledge in a mentoring context, we also gain a way of life. We also gain an attitude. And we also get to see a living, personal example. So, preaching and studying and the acquisition of biblical truth is good, and we don't want to belittle that at all. But when that is combined with a mentoring context, a mentoring relationship, we get much more that helps us to develop a fuller Christ-likeness. Mentoring, in my mind, is not a new fad that will quickly disappear. It is based on the view that relationships are important to God and the very basis for the living and learning of our faith. We do not live out our faith in a vacuum. We live our faith out in the context of other people and relationships. And that's very important to God. Three of the many reasons why mentoring is experiencing an upsurge of interest today is because more people are recognizing its value, more people are realizing the need for meaningful relationships in their life, and more people are understanding how important relationships are to God and to the living out of our faith. Now that we've examined the culture of our day and the historical perspective of mentoring, let's take some time to define what mentoring is so we have a good relationship, a working definition of our terms for clear understanding. Is mentoring the same as discipleship, or is mentoring something totally different? Does mentoring fall under the realm of discipleship? Or is it the other way around? Does discipleship fall under the realm of mentoring? So you see, a discussion on the meaning of mentoring will help us to distinguish between the two terms. Mentoring is a nice word, but if we're going to talk about it and learn about it, we're going to have to settle upon a definition and an agreement on the concept so that we have a good foundation and a solid starting point for understanding. The actual word mentor or mentoring is not found in the Bible. Now, that may bother some, but it really isn't bothersome when one considers that the word Trinity, for example, isn't found in the Bible either. However, the concept is, even though mentor or mentoring is not found in the Bible, be assured that the mentoring process and the mentoring concept is clearly seen in the inspired pages of God's Word. We'll see this in great detail when we arrive at the point where we examine the biblical data and where we examine in detail the life of Christ. At this point, however, just let me assure you that the concept is found in the biblical literature. Now, the term disciple is found in the Bible. Examining this term will aid us in our understanding of the term mentor. I believe mentoring is really today's definition of discipleship redefined. Now, I want to say that again. I believe mentoring is really today's definition of discipleship redefined. We rarely use the term disciple today in the true biblical sense of the word. The Greek word for disciple is mathetes. Now, the verb form of this word occurs 25 times in the New Testament and only 6 times in the Gospel. The noun form, however, occurs 264 times in the New Testament, exclusively in the Gospels and Acts. One of the primary hermeneutical principles of biblical interpretation is exegesis rather than eisegesis. In other words, it is invalid to read into or apply to the first century text meanings from our culture and time. People do this all the time. I've been guilty of doing this. But it is really an invalid way of interpreting the Bible. It is reading into the text something that our culture, that is pertinent or highlighted in our culture. And that is invalid. Correct interpretation entails discovering what the context was like. And what that word meant at the time that it was written. So we must ask ourselves, what did the biblical writers have in mind when they used the term mathetes? And what would someone who read the word or heard the word mathetes in the first century understand it to mean? That's exegesis, not eisegesis. In the ancient world, mathetes, disciple, variously designated an apprentice, or one who accompanied a teacher in order to learn from him. In classical Greek, a man was called a mathetes, or a disciple, when he binds himself to someone else in order to acquire his practical and theoretical knowledge. He may be an apprentice in a trade, he may be a student of medicine, or he may be a member of a philosophical school. In the New Testament, the term is used to indicate total attachment to someone in discipleship. Jesus' disciples did not assemble in a formal classroom. They assembled in open fields and secluded places. The circumstances were as varied as the situations and locations of Jesus' ministry. Jesus did not give his disciples interpretations of others, but he gave them his own divine words. Jesus' 12 disciples were followers. They were learners. They were pupils who accompanied him with a total attachment to the Master to learn both theoretical and practical knowledge. By being with their Master day in and day out, they heard him teach, they observed him in practice, and he helped them in their daily application of learning. From this description, it sounds like Jesus was mentoring his disciples. He was able to teach through modeling and through sharing. The disciples seemed to be much more like protégés rather than classroom students. They were learning a way of life and not merely facts and figures. Even though we'll examine the mentoring style of Jesus in further detail a little later on, it appears, at least at this point, that Jesus mentored the 12 disciples. Jesus is the mentor, and his disciples are the mentorees. So within a biblical framework, disciple is a close synonym for mentor, and discipleship would be a close synonym for mentoring. Since the term mentor or mentoring is not found in the Bible, the term disciple contains the concept of mentoring. But if biblical discipleship is the same as mentoring, then why must we confuse it by adding another term like mentoring? Let's just leave discipleship alone. Let's not talk about mentoring. Let's not place it in the conversation at all. It's simply confusing. Well, the term mentoring is used because we rarely use the term disciple today in the true biblical sense. Now, if the word mentor wasn't around and everyone used the terms disciple and discipleship the way the Bible uses the words, then there would be no confusion. But in our culture, the term discipleship has tended to focus on a very narrow segment of spirituality. We think of discipleship as Bible study. We think of discipleship as scripture memorization. We think of discipleship as learning 7 steps to prayer. We think of discipleship as learning why one should join a church and so on. Discipleship in our culture is often completely void of the mentoring aspect. When a church offers a discipleship class, what do they talk about? And how do they teach? Well, normally, it's offered on a Sunday morning as a Sunday school class, usually lasts about 1 hour, and usually there is one teacher who presents the knowledge to be learned, usually on basic topics of the Christian faith. Some people may meet on a weeknight for a little longer in a more personable atmosphere, possibly someone's home, but the same methodology usually exists. And this is usually what comes to mind when we think of discipleship. Sometimes individuals meet one-on-one for a period of time to learn certain basics. And although this is closer to mentoring, it is not mentoring. This is the end of number one.